All right, we are finally live with a brand new episode of the Xbox 2 podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Randall Thor 19, man with the million. Or you know what? Actually, someone today said that the whole catchphrase is cringy and I should drop it. So I'm going to ask my co-host here, Jez Corden of Windows Central. How you doing, buddy?
I'm okay. I'm the man without a million.
You're the man without a million, but almost the man.
I'm going to start saying I'm the man without a million.
But you're almost the man with 100,000, though.
I've got 100,000 now, man.
Oh, congrats.
Congrats to me. It only took, what, 12 years?
Yeah, it only took a little bit of time. But I got to say, though, Jez, getting back to my intro. Is the intro that I do from my normal videos, is it cringy? When I call myself the man with the million, considering I don't really go after Gamerscore that hard at much anymore. So I just drop that from the intro and just be like, hey guys, it's Rand with another video. Get rid of the whole thing. Or what do you think?
F the haters, man.
Oh, the haters, huh?
Stick it. Keep it, man. Like every YouTuber has their little thing that they do at the start of the video.
Yeah, right? That's true.
What does that boogie guy say? Coming to you live from the power of the interwebs. And I remember him because of his weird catchphrase. So, you know, stick with it, man.
Yeah, maybe I'll stick with it. Maybe I'll throw it in here and there. Maybe I don't have to do it every single video. But, you know, it was just something I think someone mentioned it during the TXR podcast. And it kind of just stuck ever since then. But, yeah, I just wanted to kind of bring that up. But how you doing? How's your week been covering GDC, pumping out those articles for Windows Central, dropping leaks like you did earlier today?
I did indeed. We had a nice one today. Got the box art for the all-digital console and also some information, more information about what it is. I suppose we'll talk a bit more about that later, but that was fun. Other than that, yeah, pretty much. Just been working. It's pretty busy because I'm in the UK visiting family, so in and around work I'm visiting family and all that stuff. Not a huge amount of time for gaming, but I have been playing, you know, some games. What have you been up to, man?
Well, I have been obviously making videos. It's there's a lot to talk about this week. I have actually watched a couple movies the last couple nights. Been playing Division 2, which we'll talk about in the games played segment. But so I mentioned before, I got an LG OLED, right? One of the best purchases I've ever made, thanks to Dealer Gaming, thanks to Lethal Papa, and a whole bunch of other people who pushed me into making that purchase, because my God, do the games look so good on that TV, Jez. I swear, it made the Xbox One feel new again, seeing these games in HDR. Oh my God, Division 2 looks great, even if it is like the lower than PC settings or whatever Digital Foundry says, still looks damn good, right? So I watched Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, I think it's called. Yes. And oh my God, on that TV in HDR, man, God, what a thrill, man. Like, not only did the movie look amazing, but the colors, the animation, the movie was just phenomenal, you know, just the story. But Jesus, man, I sat there and I was just like, wow. Because I don't really watch that many movies, especially on this TV. So usually, because the Comcast box is hooked up to the one upstairs. But this one I rented through Xbox and they had like the UHD, like the whole download thing. And I was blown away by the movie. And I was like, damn. And then I watched Triple Frontier on Netflix yesterday, which is a new Ben Affleck movie, which was all right. And Marcus Mizurek wants to know if I have burn-in yet. No, no burn-in on the OLED. I don't really keep it on a static image for very long. I don't watch like CNN and stuff like that. I play a different variety of games. So, I mean, you do that, you're pretty much not going to get burn-in. I mean, unless you're playing FIFA 24/7 or Overwatch or whatever, like burn-in is kind of a thing that you kind of let happen, I guess.
It's not permanent though either, is it?
No, it's, if you get it, it's permanent unless you like fix the panel. Yeah, like real bad burn-in. I think Artings, they did like some tests like with it, and yeah, it's pretty noticeable. But as long as you pretty much play different content all the time and don't leave your TV on 24/7 with like static HUDs, it's not an issue. So I know I have the B8 Harvinder, but yeah, God, I love the TV and I need to start watching more movies on here because it's absolutely amazing. So I know that's a little jealous because you said you couldn't fit that kind of TV in your room right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I physically can't, you know. I'm going to move out this year, probably. Me and my girlfriend will get our own place, and then I'll probably explore the OLED. But by then, I probably have spent all my spare cash on furniture and stuff, so I probably won't be able to afford an OLED.
Yeah.
It's catch 22, man. It's catch 22. Live at home, then you got loads of money, but if you move out, you got no money. So, but then you got no space, so GG.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So, while everybody's filing in here, if you would be so kind to hit the like button and hit that share button, share the podcast out so more people can, find the show. We'd appreciate it. And hi to everybody listening to this later on Google Podcast or Google Play, iTunes. I always screw it up somehow, some way. It's Google Podcast. I don't know. Either way. Let's get into what we've been playing. It's probably going to be pretty short. But what have you been up to, Jez?
Well, I'm still getting through The Division. It's been really busy, so I haven't like gotten as far into it as I'd like to. I'm about two thirds or maybe three quarters of the way through the main story missions right now. Still loving it. The loot system is great, and I'm starting to feel that sort of loot addiction now. I've started getting mods for my skills to lower their cooldowns and increase their damage and stuff. I kind of felt like when you start out with the game, the skills are kind of really weak and almost useless. But like when you start getting the first set pieces and it's like, you know, this set bonus lowers the cooldown by 20%, or this increases the damage by 20%, and so on and so forth, you get to that point where it's like you start to feel your character growing. It feels like the whole game has been set up to complement the end game and the gear grind and stuff like that, and the sense of progressing your character doesn't really come in till further into the game. But I'm loving it so far, man. I'm loving it. Have you been playing it as well?
Division 2?
Yes.
Yeah, I have put in, I would say, around 35, 36 hours. I hit level 30 on the character. I beat the game. I'm in World Tier 1, and I gotta say, they really did concentrate on the end game because it's really not over after you finish the campaign. There's like a whole new faction that shows up with different types of enemies that do different types of thing. And it's just kind of a...
No spoilers.
Yeah, it's just like a progressing thing. You go to World Tier 1 and then World Tier 2, 3, 4. And I'm really impressed with what they did. Like, they've made Division 2 a better game than Division 1 ever was. Now, some of the complaints I had last time we spoke was I felt it was too easy. Up to a certain point, around level 16, 17, it did start getting harder, and you had to do more, you had to be cautious of what was going on, because enemies started to flank you more, and they started to be a little bit more harder, and that's when the game became really enjoyable for me and my co-op partners, because in the beginning, it was kind of like, there's really not much of a challenge. You're just kind of going into a room and shooting, all right, rinse and repeat, going to the next room. But like they changed things up towards the end and it gets a little bit harder, so it became more enjoyable. But the one thing I will have to say, the mission structures, where you go in Washington, D.C., like the Air and Space Museum, some of those levels are absolutely fantastic. Like the visual set pieces they do, absolutely great.
I tell you what I couldn't believe was I think it's a space administration. It's some space museum anyway, and you're going to a planetarium. And it's like a real planetarium.
Yeah, yeah, that stuff was really cool.
You're doing this gun battle in the planetarium dome while the Earth, the video of the Earth 3D is playing above you, and all the, you know, the space stuff is popping up above. And it's like, man, they really managed to get a lot of creativity out of real life, I guess, which is like sometimes it's kind of the real world setting can be a bit flat because there's no zombies, there's no dragons, there's no magic and stuff like that. So I mean, there's like they're kind of restricted with what they can do there, where there's no sci-fi elements and stuff like that. But the amount of creativity and the attention to detail, like in the space museum, you can actually just you can read the plaques in the exhibits. Like, if you, you can literally tour the Space Museum as if it was the real Space Museum. And I was like, man, I'm trying to play a game here, and they're trying to educate me about the Mars rover and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's details everywhere, man. Like, you could get lost if you just kind of look at all the like you said, the inscriptions, like there's things everywhere. Like, that's one of the things I love the Washington DC setting in this game. I think it makes I was kind of worried that DC wouldn't be as good as New York because I thought they nailed it. But then playing this, and I'm like, no, I honestly think Washington DC was a better choice. Like, yeah. There's so many cool visual moments here and cool places to explore. And I'm actually kind of getting into the end game. Like, honestly, like, if it was something like Destiny, I played the campaign and I didn't care. Like, yeah, I would get my power level up because I wanted to do a raid. But then after that, like, I didn't care. This one, I'm in world tier one. I'm, you know, like, going to progress to world tier two and tier three. I want to get everything done. I want to be ready for when the raid hits. Like, I'm just... Currently, I'm really just enjoying it. I know that'll end at some point because other games will be coming out, but I'm really impressed by what they did here.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited to get to your level. I'm still like level 18-ish now, I think.
Yeah, well, once you hit level 30 and after you beat the game, that's when you unlock the gear score. You go to world tier one, and then it's all about obviously finding better gear.
Yeah, sure.
With that gear score, with the set bonuses and stuff. And then once you beat world tier one, you move into world tier two, which is the same thing with harder enemies that drop better loot. And then you get to world tier three and then world tier four. So you want to get your gear score up to like 460. And it's so far, it's really cool. Like, I ain't going to play like Division two super long, but I want to at least play the raid. And we'll see where I go from there. But we got tons of games coming out because I just got a review copy today for Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice. Nice. A game which I was like, should I play? Should I not play? I know people have been asking me to play Bloodborne, which I promise I will do. And I still have to do Last Guardian. Devil May Cry 5 kind of got put on the back burner because I was addicted to Apex Legends, which I haven't played in like a week. So yeah, I'll be playing Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice, and I have no idea what I'm in for. I've been seeing some of the reviews and people are like, dude, it's harder than Dark Souls, it's the hardest game ever made of all time. And I'm just like, man,
seriously, I think we're under embargo, but some of the Dark Souls experts on my team, they're veterans of Dark Souls. They've played all the Souls games, Bloodborne and even Demon Souls and stuff like that. And they're finding it tough. So I don't think this is going to be for me.
maybe not having any experience in Dark Souls and Bloodborne helps, because apparently it plays a lot differently. You need to block and parry. There's no like farming in the game. It's kind of just need to progress. There's no character building. Like, you
can, more about finesse.
So maybe it's more of a game that I would enjoy. So I'm going to play it. Hopefully I can beat it. I want to beat it because I don't want people to say, oh, get good, Ran, you know? So I'm looking forward to checking that out. And that's like it. There's like Sekiro's like the last big game for about a month. And then a month from now, we have Mortal Kombat 11 and Days Gone. So we got a lot of time. I'm going to get through Sekiro, get through Last Guardian, go back to play Devil May Cry 5, Metro, hopefully. So many games. I barely have any time to play the ones I want. But
yeah, I started Metro over on Ranger Hardcore, and I just haven't had time to go back to it yet. And then I've been getting into Fire Emblem as well.
And you've been playing Pokemon, which nobody cares about. Who cares about Pokemon?
Millions of people. Millions care about Pokemon.
You know, I will say the movie does look pretty cool, though. Ain't gonna lie.
Ryan Reynolds, right? It seems like they're gonna have like a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor in that movie, like not taking itself too seriously. I'm quite looking forward to the movie, but I don't know. There's just loads of games coming up that I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah, and it just is like, finally, we're out of the boring period with Crackdown 3 and Far Cry New Dawn. Man, those two games back-to-back, they suck the energy from me, dude. And you know what? Let's jump right into a topic, since I mentioned Crackdown 3. What happened to that game, Jez? What happened to that game on the MPD listing? Like, not in the top 20, not in Xbox-only top 10, when State of Decay and Sea of Thieves and Forza all charted. Hell, State of Decay was number one, and people didn't believe it. Remember, people were like, MPD's lying. There's no way State of Decay was number one. They're lying. Crackdown 3, nowhere to be found. What happened to this game? Did, like, nobody just care, or did literally everybody who wanted to play the game not buy it and play it through Game Pass? Like, what's the story on this?
Well, you know, if you look at some metrics like achievements unlocked and things like that, it seems that like a fair amount of people did play the game comparatively. But like you say, I think there was such a high profile amount of negativity and a lot of sort of commentary around Game Pass with regards to this, like, is this ultimate Game Pass game? You know, like, you shouldn't buy this, you should get it in Game Pass. Like, pretty much every review said that. Like, the only saving grace of Crackdown is that it's in Game Pass. I think it's pretty fair to assume that nobody bought it and everyone went in on Game Pass, you know. I think even people who enjoy the game probably got it on Game Pass, because why wouldn't you, you know? It's not like a game that you're gonna pay $60 for or $50 or whatever it is in America and then play on forever and ever. I mean, picking it up for $10, completing it in a month, and then putting it down, that's a far smarter purchase decision in my
It does make sense why Microsoft didn't advertise this game, right? They had to have known what they had on their hands. They must have known nobody was going to buy the game after the Wrecking Zone was fully unveiled. You know, those three maps, the two modes. And you know what? To put it even to more perspective, we talked about this before the show. Epic, during their GDC talk yesterday, and trust me, guys, we're going to get into the Epic versus Steam Store exclusive battle a little bit later on, because that has like huge ramifications. But they showed off a demo for something called Chaos, which is a Epic Unreal Engine's new physics-based destruction technology. Yeah. And that is done by CloudGen, correct?
I don't know, but it looks pretty familiar, right?
It does look familiar. So I was looking at that and I'm like, man, they really outdid the tech in Crackdown 3. But then I thought, wait a minute, aren't these the guys that Epic stole to get them to work on that stuff? Is that supposed to be what Crackdown 3 was supposed to be?
it's hard to tell. You know, there's so many rumors I've heard about the development of Crackdown, and you know, we've talked about it and done it to death at this point, but I know that CloudGen, they built the destruction engine, they went to Epic to work on Fortnite and stuff like that, and then a lot of the work CloudGen had done had to be redone for Crackdown 3. So like, you just don't know the full story. Maybe we'll never know, but yeah, it does make you feel kind of sad. Like, maybe this is why we could have had, you know.
It really would make an interesting book, or an interesting chapter in the book. Something like Jason Schreier wrote his book. I think it's called like Blood, Sweat, and Pixels. Maybe Jez Corden can write a book.
Oh man, that's too much work.
Come on. Get to the true story about what happened between Crackdown 3 and Scalebound. That's two chapters in a book. You can do Scalebound and you can do Crackdown 3.
I don't know. It seems like hard work to me, man.
Seems like hard work indeed. It does really do. It does really seem like it. What else?
I'll leave that to the real journalists. I'll stick to leaks.
Yeah, so before we get into the big topics, obviously we're going to be talking about Google Stadia. We're going to talk about Epic and Steam. We're going to talk about what Xbox is doing and their strategy versus Google. You know, did you read Phil Spencer's email to Team Xbox after the Stadia announcement, Jez?
Yes, Brad yeah. Sams leaked an internal email.
He did.
Really good stuff coming from Brad lately. It basically said, it was basically Phil reassuring people at Xbox that they're going to go big on X clouds and stuff like that.
But is that what people want to see at E3, though? Is that, do people want, I guess we'll save that for later, but the question I'm going to ask is, like, do people really want to see them go big on xCloud at E3? But,
well, I suppose it depends. I mean, if all they're doing is revealing how it works or letting people get hands-on on it, letting the media say how good it is or how bad it is and stuff like that, maybe that's more what it means. I think E3 is still going to feel very traditional for Xbox fans who just want to see games and want to see that Microsoft's making its investments in the right place. But for those of us who are interested in xCloud and how Microsoft's going to compete with Google, because obviously Google isn't going to release their own hardware, at least it sounds like they're not going to release their own hardware. They're going to stick to streaming via the cloud. And honestly, reactions to Stadia have been a bit mixed from the press. Like, some people said it was pretty good. Other people have said it's too laggy. Like, someone on my team who tried it said that it felt like when your TV isn't in game mode and there's like this very sort of, like, it's playable, but it doesn't feel great. And it just makes you want to play things on your TV instead. So it makes me wonder, like, if that's just a case of the laws of physics, or whether Google just isn't going to be as good as Microsoft. It's going to be interesting to see how they compare, because Phil has always said that, and I paraphrase, Phil has always said that xCloud is going to be console quality. Now, for me, console quality means no input lag or very low levels of input lag. If all I can play on xCloud is turn-based games, that's fine, you know, but it's not going to be the game-changing, industry-changing thing that it's sort of been cracked up to be.
Yeah, so you might, like, since we brought it up and you're kind of talking about it, let's talk about the Google Stadia thing. The big announcement from this week, I watched a press conference on Tuesday, I did a video about it. It's their vision of basically the future of gaming. It's a streaming-only solution where, what were the words that Phil Harrison used? What was it? Like, the data center is now your console, or yeah, the data center is now your platform, or something like that, right? Where basically you stream games. They think it's the future. I will admit, some interesting technology, like watching a trailer for Assassin's Creed Odyssey and then a play button shows up right next to it and you click play and they say 5 seconds later you can be playing. I thought that was pretty cool. They had the whole tech demo of the guy going between the mobile phone and the laptop and the, you know, the TV and the computer. Although there must have been some insane lag or it was pre-recorded, because the dude literally pressed A 3 times to jump in Assassin's Creed and Cassandra didn't jump. So not sure if it was a real demo or if there was some insane lag. But I mean, to me, the whole conference was them selling you an idea. Now, whether that idea comes to fruition as big as they think it is, that's what it was to me. They were trying to sell developers on this idea of putting your games on their service so they can reach these 2 billion gamers on YouTube and Android phones and all this stuff. But it really lacked any meat. Like, what is the pricing structure? Are you buying games outright? Are you renting games from them? Is there subscription service? I've heard talk and chatter that from Ubisoft CEO, I think he recently said something along the lines of, there'll be many different ways to pay outright, $60 to buy the game, or maybe you only buy 2 hours of time and that's all you have. Like,
and this is the thing. It's like, there's so many unanswered questions and there's issues of trust as well, because we all know about Google's battles with antitrust, you know, lawsuits. We know about their privacy lawsuits. We know that they've cancelled so many products over the years. And also, they don't really have the most reliable track record for not cancelling things. And, you know, frankly, neither does Microsoft. But, you know, every big tech company has projects that cancel. But Google took on Facebook and lost with Google Plus. That's been that they literally announced that Google Plus is being shut down the same week that they announced this whole game streaming thing. And like in a lot of the interviews with Phil Harrison, they were basically like fielding questions like, can we trust you? Can we trust you? And stuff like that. And I think that's going to be a big question here is like, do people see Google as a company who can sell them a permanent product? Or is Google the kind of company where you get like sort of transient products that you never really truly own? Like you don't own any YouTube videos that you watch on their platform. You don't like, I mean, they do sell books and apps and, you know, movies through Google Play, but how many people really, you know, how many people actually use Google Play as their number one place to buy movies and stuff like that? So there's a lot of trust and I suppose authority questions around Google, like can they actually build a service that's reliable and stuff like that? And while some of the convenience stuff is cool, like you say, like being able to watch a YouTube trailer and then instantly try the game out, maybe that'll be great for demos, but I don't know if I want to, I mean, I'm an Android phone user. I don't know if I want to buy games from Google simply on the basis that they are Google, you know?
Look, I'll be the first one to admit, game streaming is not going to be my thing. Not my primary way of interacting with video games, right? I want local hardware. I don't want to have to be at the mercy of my internet. Now, I have decent internet. I think I have 100 megs up or 100 megs down, 10 megs up, right? But I, unfortunately, have a data cap with Comcast. I get 1 terabyte. I play a lot of video games. So basically, unless I'm willing to pay an extra $50 a month to Comcast to get unlimited, because I play a lot of games, and if I were to go to Google, I would be streaming that stuff. That's going to chew up a ton of data. So am I willing to pay for the games and then also pay for my internet connection, pay the extra $50 a month? That's going to be a lot of, you know, problem for a lot of people. But like when I was watching the conference, and I know it was GDC, right? I get it. Like they're not going to have those. It was basically to sell game developers to make games from the platform. But as a consumer watching it, I have a lot of questions, like the pricing structure, which we just talked about. What games are you going to have on the service? Like they didn't. Really
there's no sign of Fortnite. There's no sign of Minecraft. You know, these big heavy hitting games that, I mean, yeah, Assassin's Creed's great and stuff like that, but everyone, it's just Apex Legends, Fortnite, and Minecraft, and those kind of games that they really need on the service to sell it to the wide middle, you know?
Yeah, and I guess I know GDC is not the place to announce it, but like they didn't have a lot of partners, so I'm wondering, like, man,
but is it not the place to announce it? Because I remember when Microsoft unveiled the Xbox One, they got crucified for not announcing any games.
Oh, I do have a segue about that in just a minute here, but and then again, like the whole like, oh, it'll stream 4K 60 at what download speed do you need? And then they're like, oh, 8K 120 for the future 8K. Okay, yeah, like I really believe that. Look, and I'm gonna get into the whole because I was thinking about this and I had an interesting conversation with Zed from the Reset Era Discord. All right, so Google's streaming thing, right? Is a completely online service. You have to be connected to the internet 24/7. You're talking about like the ultimate DRM. You're talking about no more game ownership ever because it's all streaming.
Yeah.
And it really put in perspective for me because you do see some articles saying, oh, it's the future of gaming, which it very well could be 10 years from now. This could be the way we all consume games. I don't really think so. I really think it'll just be an addition on top of what we already enjoy on PC and console. I think it'll just be addition to it, not just like, oh, this is now the big thing, right? But then I think back to 2013 and how everybody from the media and to gamers, literally everybody, were destroying Microsoft for having a 24-hour check-in, which is basically online only, and having a DRM policy that basically turned your physical games into digital games, right? But you would still own them. And here's Google taking that vision and going even one step farther, maybe even 10 steps farther. And I don't see the same reaction whatsoever. Like, I don't see Polygon and IGN and Eurogamer crucifying Google like they crucified Xbox. And I understand, just like Taser Delight just said in chat, a lot has changed in 6 years. Yes, I know a lot has changed in 6 years. The rise of digital, people becoming more accepted of streaming. What has happened with Netflix? What has happened with Spotify? I know the world has changed in 6 years. And I guess this really just validates that Microsoft's strategy, they were just completely way too early for this. They were just completely way too early. But it's just, I'm just pointing it out. And I see my bro OBJ in the chat. He's like, talk that shit, Rand. Look, I just remember all this stuff. Microsoft got killed. And it's one of the biggest reasons they lost this generation was because everybody hated them, from the media to the gamers. Now Google's doing something even worse, and I don't really see a lot of pushback. I just see people saying, it's the future.
The thing is, it's not exactly the same. To play devil's advocate here, and everyone knows I hate Google, but to play devil's advocate, Google's not selling you a $400 box or however much it costs in the US. They're just going to sell you a subscription service. So I think the truth is that people let them get away with it because that's the whole business model. It's not like some half measure fundamental change to the existing console model, which is what Microsoft was pushing, right?
Yeah. And I guess maybe Microsoft sees Google entering and doing this as, like Sam Tolbert says in chat, he says, when the presentation ended, I guarantee you Microsoft breathed a sigh of relief because Google is nowhere near as far along as I thought they were. And they might be the one company that's really more hated than Microsoft. Right, Google?
Yeah.
So
Google pretty hated.
Yeah, they are. So now, not because now you even have, like, I see people talking and posting like memes, and it's like Sony fanboys and Xbox fanboys coming together with console hardware, right? Like, everybody's like, we need to, you know, bond together and take down Google. It's like everybody like kind of come together over this whole thing because we know Xbox is doing hardware. Cream Chowdhury reiterated again that, you know, they're going to be doing hardware for a long time. I predict that we got two gens, at least a minimum of two generations before Xbox hardware even potentially goes away. So I think we're good to 2032. Even if streaming takes off.
I think.
And that's an if.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean, what did you think overall of the whole presentation and like what they're trying to do?
Honestly, I didn't watch it.
You never watch anything.
That's playing Pokemon, man. Come on. But I didn't watch it because I was just busy with other things. But I read our coverage of it, you know, and what my colleagues were saying about it, because my colleagues are at GDC. I'm not at GDC, so I let them take point on it, and you know, while they focus on that, I can do other things. But you know, I'm more like most gamers, you know, I try to align my thinking with, you know, the consumer and stuff like that, and I can take an approach that most people are going to take is, great, they can announce all this stuff, they can show it off, and it looks all flashy in a press conference or whatever, or it doesn't, whatever. I just want to know if it works. You know, I'm intrigued to try it. Because, like I've said on the show last week, that, you know, I've rekindled my love with Nintendo recently because of the portability factor of the Switch and the 3DS. And I can play games where normally I wouldn't be able to play them, like in the airport, like, you know, wherever. And yeah, I don't expect that I'll be able to play Overwatch on airport Wi-Fi, but maybe I'll be able to play, I don't know, turn-based games. Maybe I'll be able to play XCOM. Maybe I'll be able to play Final Fantasy VII, which is coming to Xbox soon. I'm happy with that. I'm happy to play turn-based games on laggy internet and stuff like that. But that's the main reason I'm interested in it. Will it work? And I'm just going to take a back seat and wait and see, because a lot of the discussions about whether it will penetrate into the mainstream and stuff like that ultimately hinge on the fact, will it work? You know, I think the consumer at large, they don't care about things like the morality of Google. They don't care about, I honestly don't think most mainstream people care about ownership. You know, it's just the core gamers who care about making sure they actually own the stuff they buy. I think for most people, they take the convenience over it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, history has shown people will choose convenience over pretty much everything else. That's why Spotify exists. And that's why Netflix exists. It's just so convenient to just sit down in front of your TV and just click a button and watch something. Although those are cheaper forms of entertainment, right? I mean, Netflix, $12 a month, Spotify, free. You know, like even if you just want to buy a single from iTunes, it's $1. Games are really expensive. You know, $60 for a brand new game is a chunk of change that not everybody can afford. So it's a little bit different there. And streaming, I don't know if I'll ever be good with just, oh, well, you got to accept the latency. I'm like, why do I have to? I shouldn't have to accept latency. Like you said, your friend's playing, and it's like, there's latency there. It's like, it's not, that's not, and look, I'll be the first one to admit, like, I'm not going to get to Google Stadia. I have an Xbox, I have a PlayStation, I have a Switch. Two of those, at least, will be doing next-generation consoles. PS5, Xbox Anacana, the Xbox Scarlet. I will be getting both of those. So I'm good. Now, that's not to say I won't, I don't know, try it out, buy like a Chromecast and stick it into my TV or whatever it is, and maybe like, all right, let's see how this actually works. But it would have to be, you know what it would have to be for, Jez? It would have to be for Google Stadia exclusives, because that's the other point I wanted to bring up. Jade Raymond, she came out there and announced that, you know, they're building a new first party infrastructure. But the question I have is, how long is it, have they been building exclusive games for a while now? Are they just beginning now? Or are they going to be spending money like Epic and getting the games to come to the service in the meantime while they try to produce their own games?
Well, I've heard, first of all, that Google is looking to money hack developers, and they are sending out feelers, and they're even looking to money hack DLC like Destiny did with PlayStation. So don't be surprised if you see like DLC for some of your favorite games become Stadia exclusive. My God, how annoying would that be? Like the DLC for your favorite game is exclusive to a laggy streaming platform. Can you imagine how angry you'd be? But I suppose that's like areas where Google could really screw up, is if they like, I mean, it's one thing to, you know, get exclusive DLC for a home-based console where there's no real downsides if you already own a PlayStation, you know. But can you imagine if like they money hat DLC for a shooter onto a laggy streaming platform? They're going to buy themselves a lot of negative PR.
I see them money hatting just games in general. And unlike Epic versus Steam, where it's confined to the PC space, they're going to money hat it away from Xbox and PlayStation. Because the only way, I mean, one of the ways they're going to have to is they're going to need exclusive content to separate themselves from what Microsoft is doing, what Sony's doing, eventually whatever Amazon is doing. And that's the only way to really do it. I mean, Epic is kind of, I wouldn't say proving it right now, but they think it's the way to go. And I just wanted to address Show Shady and Zed in the chat. They says, nobody needs to get Stadia. And Zed says, the thing about Stadia, or Stadia, I hate that name, actually. I don't like that name. You aren't getting it. And while that's true, because it'll just be there, if I'm going to play it on the TV through Chromecast, they did say I need to get the controller. And to me, that's considered getting it. If I have to buy that ugly-looking controller, ugh, what a piece of garbage that is, then I consider that getting Stadia, because that controller is probably going to be $60. Because I'm not going to be playing Stadia on the PC. I'm not going to be playing it on mobile phones, because who wants to play those games on that small of a screen anyways? So I have the big TV there. I'll be playing it on the TV. I need the controller. So to me, that's getting Stadia.
Yeah.
Show Sadie says, first time I've heard the term money hatting. I've heard it now 5 times. Well, you must not have been around last gen quite a bit. That stems from a Penny Arcade article. Actually, that goes back all the way to the OG Xbox era, quite frankly. That comes from a Penny Arcade article, comic panel, where I think Munch's Odyssey was exclusive to Xbox, and the guy was like, I like money, and he had like a pad of money, and people just referred to that as money hatting, essentially. I'm sure somebody in chat remembers that era of gaming. It's quite old. It's a quite old term. So when I say somebody's buying exclusives, I just kind of think of that, and I just say they money hatted it. It's also a term that has been used on like NeoGAF and ResetEra and stuff, and I've been on those places forever. So see, Raven
Rand with the talking about etymology history lesson there. I didn't know where that came from, actually.
Yeah.
I've only seen it used in forums.
Oh, I know, Shady. I know you've been around, Shady. I'm just saying that's, I don't know. It always kind of stuck in my hand, like my head. But yeah, I think Google's going to spend money and they're going to try to get games exclusive to their platform. For sure. Man, oh man. I honestly, though, I will say it is coming this year. Did you expect it this year, Jez? Because I am quite shocked it is coming this year.
I'm surprised too. I mean, it's interesting. Like, Google's sort of like, I kind of already feel that Google doesn't really get how video game PR works and stuff like that. I just get that gut sort of feeling that they're going to screw some things up. Like, it'd be so funny if it got delayed, you know, and then they're basically hurting themselves and stuff like that. But it all depends on like what you say. Do they have the games? Do they have the content and stuff like that? And we talked about how Microsoft can basically flip a switch and put a Xbox game onto xCloud if a developer agrees to it. And they showed in their GDC presentation that there is going to be like very basic Xbox touch controls for phones, and developers can make their own touch controls if they want to and stuff like that. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Google's thought all of those aspects through, because Microsoft seems very keen to emphasize the phone part of it, whereas Google seems to be like, you know, Google has a different strategy in some places. They want to push their Chrome devices, their Chromebooks, their Chrome sticks. What are they called now? Chromecast, you said. You know, and its own services and stuff like that. Whereas Microsoft has to convince other people to use its services on their existing devices. And as we've seen from Microsoft Groove, like Groove Music, they completely failed to make the case for Groove Music on Android. Like, nobody used it. So, you know, it's not going to be plain sailing for them either. You know?
Well, no, but they do seem like they're hitting the ground running, where Microsoft is really taking the slower approach with xCloud, because you're going to have the public trials later this year. I don't really expect xCloud to fully launch until 2020. And I don't really even expect it to be a really big thing for Microsoft until about, I don't know, 2023, 2024. It seems to be a slower process for them. And maybe that's just because they understand messaging. They understand they got destroyed this gen about poor messaging and trying to do things too fast. You need to guide people into the next step. You need to be careful with how much you change. So they're being really careful about how they're messaging it, right? So that's what they're going to do. I mean, they're going to compete with Google in that space. It's going to be interesting, though. Like, if Google's there first, Does that necessarily mean they're going to be the best or the one that popularizes it? Or is Microsoft like, hey, you know what? You can get there first. We'll do it better. And we're going to have exclusive content coming. We're going to have the Halo. We're going to have Gears. We're going to have Forza. We bought a whole bunch of studios. They're going to be making games. We're going to combine Game Pass with xCloud, which is already an existing business model, and just, it's up there. You can subscribe and you get these games, and people know it. Developers know it works. There's going to be a ton of games in there. They seem to be kind of, crossing their I's, dotting their T's. It's like Phil said, in his response to Stadia, which you mentioned before, it's like they have the strategy, the game plan. They believe in their three pillars of content, community, and what was the third one? Content, community, and
coconuts.
Content, community, and coconuts. I'm blanking on the third. Somebody in chat has to know the three pillars that Satya and Phil talk about. It's content, it's community,
cloud.
And cloud. There you go. The three C's.
I remember when you said Satya, because Satya is like synonymous with cloud.
Yeah. And so they're going to do it. And then I don't even know where I was going with it. I just lost my train of thought. What about Sony? Because this is basically Xbox versus Google versus Sony and soon to be Amazon. And, well, I guess you can add Nintendo into the bunch. What is Sony going to do with this new competitor that is completely online, that is going to try to sell games and take game sales away from PlayStation, which is their core business? How do they respond? Do they kind of, for lack of a better term, bury their head in the sand, release a PlayStation 5 that is very traditional, hope that streaming doesn't take off while offering their own streaming solution with PlayStation Now? I mean, they don't have the infrastructure that Google, Microsoft, or Amazon has. So what is Sony's play? What are they doing on this one?
They're going to make a new PlayStation Vita. Yay!
PlayStation Vita. Oh, that'll solve all their problems.
Nah. I don't know, man. It's like, I think Sony can, it's like you say, cloud streaming is not going to replace anything in the short term. And I think Sony can continue to exist feeling that, frankly, the niche that it always has. And it is a niche because the console market is just a part of the overall gaming industry. And Sony is just a part of that part of the gaming industry. So I think Sony can subsist on doing what they've done for the time being while they build up to either partnering with Amazon for content and stuff like that, or maybe even partnering with Microsoft if you want to be sacrilegious about it. Because I've heard as well that beyond xCloud, Microsoft might actually be looking to bundle xCloud as a service that other companies can buy. Like if Sony wants to make its own streaming service, they could buy xCloud from Microsoft and make their own version of xCloud. I've heard that is something that Microsoft might be working on in addition to its own exclusive platform. Because, for example, Netflix runs on Amazon Web Services, and Netflix uses Amazon Web Services video streaming platform. However, they compete with Amazon directly on Amazon Prime Video. So it could be that Microsoft makes its own version of xCloud to sell onto competitors and stuff like that.
That would be the ultimate Microsoft thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's Microsoft's mission, is to help others, help other companies. That's their top-level mission. So, you know, people are annoyed in chat that we're talking about Sony in the context of this whole streaming thing. But, you know, it's like, why wouldn't you?
Hey,
you know?
Like, Sony was doing streaming first.
Exactly. Sony clearly interested in this.
They clearly have a horse in the race. They did PlayStation Now first. They were one of the first to do streaming. It's not like it's sacrilegious to say, what is Sony going to do with their streaming model in PlayStation Now? They were doing it before anybody. And now you have Google and Microsoft doing it, and Amazon, and even Walmart. There's reports that Walmart's even going to do it. Like, what is going on? So, look, I don't underestimate Sony, right? Like,
no, I think they can completely subsist doing what they're doing now.
Of course, I think they can as well. Like, they have proven time and time again that for most people, gaming and PlayStation are synonymous. You know, maybe for an older generation, it's Nintendo. But you look at, they came in with the PlayStation 1 dominated. They even dominated more with the PlayStation 2. They had an off-gen with the PlayStation 3, and they still sold 80-some-odd million PlayStations, right? And then this gen, it was just a complete massacre. What are they, almost at 100 million? Like, And what they're doing clearly works. I expect them to do the same thing for next gen, and I expect them to just have tremendous success. Yeah. But like I said, Google is a new competitor. They're going, their whole strategy is selling third-party games without the need of a box. If people do move to that, well, that takes money out of Sony's pocket, because that's their whole bread and butter, is selling other people's games. And they have a streaming service, so you just have to wonder, well, what is Sony's play? Are they going to do a traditional console and not worry about streaming? Are they going to do the traditional console and do streaming? I'm just curious to what Sony's doing in general, because we don't get a lot of leaks about them. And I, trust me, I don't underestimate Sony. They've proven time and time again that they know what they're doing, you know? So
yeah, so Sony, like, they have the best content right now out there, the best exclusive lineup. Bringing that to more devices, like, why would you be annoyed about that, you know? I think it'd be cool if Sony partnered with Amazon to bring its games to phones and stuff like that, if that's their prerogative, you know. And you can do that now. You can do that today with PlayStation Now on some devices. And, you know, I tried it. You know, I've used PlayStation Now. It's, like, it's too laggy for, like, shooters and stuff. But, again, it's, like, you can play casual games on it. You can play XCOM on it, or turn-based games or strategy games that are slow-paced. And, you know, even some platformers to some degree, you can probably play on them, you know. So it's not like you say, Sony doesn't have a horse in this race. And it's just another cool option for people who are Sony customers, you know.
Yeah,
I would honestly prefer it if Sony just made another PlayStation Vita, you know.
Yeah.
Because I honestly think that thing was really underrated.
Okay, so Gunstar, he gave us a super chat and says, really interesting discussion. Love it. Beats Brexit. Thanks for the support, buddy. And DMV fan has a question. He says, why would Sony need to partner with anyone to publish games on PC instead of launching their own storefront to cut out the middleman? I wasn't talking about partnering with somebody on the PC. I was talking about cloud infrastructure. I was talking about that, in like cloud streaming, partnering with somebody to get better coverage, one of the big three, which, like Jess said, that could be Microsoft. They could easily sell them xCloud or Amazon. Like, honestly, I'm not sure Sony needs to partner with anybody. I mean, they literally could just do traditional PlayStation 5 and be perfectly fine and kill it again. Release a God of War 2 and Horizon Zero Dawn 2 and a Bloodborne 2 and a Spider-Man 2 and just kill it. And who knows? Maybe streaming doesn't take off, Jez. Maybe people look at that and like, you know what? I kind of want to own my games even if it is digital. There's really no benefit to me to streaming this stuff. And streaming doesn't really take off. Who knows?
It has to work.
It has to work?
If it works, it'll take off. If it doesn't work, it won't. So I don't think people care about ownership as much as we do, you know?
I mean, I could see people using it. For sure. I'm not saying people aren't going to use it. When I say take off, I mean like that is on par with, you know, selling a physical, like more like as many people are streaming a game as would say buy the game physical and digital. You know what I mean? Like, well, that's what I mean by take off.
We talk about like how, like, man, why would you want to play a game on a tiny little phone? But like people play Fortnite on phones. Just because it's convenient and free.
True.
If the access is there and it's easy, you know, and it's in people's faces every time they open the Google Play Store to download an app, or in people's faces whenever they do a Google search, people will use it, man, because people are lazy. They don't research things. And ultimately, if it's cheap, you know, it's almost becomes a no-brainer, you know. Even if it sucks, it's like, oh, great, what have I lost? Like $10? Big deal, you know. I subscribe to YouTube Red just so I can have background audio, you know, because it's like, what, $10? Who cares?
Yeah. Well, Silverburst Gamer says, Rand, Sony just launched PS Now in Europe. They're expanding. Yes, I know they're expanding PlayStation Now. It does kind of lead credence in the fact that they're going to be doing more with PlayStation Now in the future. The question is, what are they going to be doing? Are we going to be seeing God of War 2 on PlayStation Now on mobile devices day one as it launched on the PlayStation 5 in the future? Are we seeing that type of scenario happen? Could Okay, look at this scenario right here. Detroit Become Human. And well, Cuphead. Cuphead went to Steam, just like me and you said it would, right? And then 30 minutes later, Detroit Became Human went to Steam. I think this is a one-off, personally. If I had to guess, I think it's Sony throwing a bone to one of their second-party developers as like a parting gift, being like, here you go, whatever. Sell your games on the Epic Store. You know, get some money while you're working on stuff for multi-platform. I don't think it's a broader strategy, and I don't think you'll start seeing other Sony games come to the PC store. I don't think it's start of an alliance. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see this as a...
Epic Game Store, I mean. My bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see this as, like, a big change. I don't see this as Sony's doing. I see this as, like... I mean, first of all, do we actually know the actual publishing terms that the Quantic Dream games have?
Well, Sony does own Detroit. They own the IP. But, I mean, I guess it's possible they somehow changed. I mean, who knows what happened with the publishing deal, but, I mean, they did own the Detroit trademark and the IP as well as Beyond Two Souls. They did own the IP, similar to how, like, Microsoft owns Quantum Break. So, and I mean, it's not like the first Sony game that they've published to end up on PC. Flowers on PC, a couple other smaller games. But I don't think anybody really thought that Detroit would come to PC. So is it, I guess my question to you, is this just a one-off like I think it is? Or are we going to start seeing, hey, here comes Horizon Zero Dawn. You know what? Epic drops a ton of money at Sony and wants to bring their games to their PC storefront. Do you think that's a possibility? Or is this more just like a one-time thing?
I think it's definitely possible. You know, I mean, God knows how much money Epic's thrown at these developers, but they just announced like $100 million for grants and stuff for developers and stuff like that. You know, I'm not gonna sit here and claim that I know for sure if Sony's partnering with Epic to deliver games on PC, but it would be interesting, right? If, for example, we start seeing, because Microsoft's supporting Steam and they're putting Master Chief Collection on Steam and probably more games in the future because now they've got the SDK working to link up the Microsoft Store and Steam. Like, what if like we get some sort of proxy war between Sony and Microsoft competing with Epic Games and Steam? And I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just like.
But does it really matter because you know you said Steam's exclusive to Microsoft.
It is.
You got roasted for that comment, by the way. I don't know if you saw that. People were people were roasting you, even though, and I could tell when you said it on the podcast last week. I'm like, you're half joking. I knew you were joking when you were saying it, but you went along with the joke because like I had just been like no joke because I knew what you were gonna say, and I'm like, don't even go there. And you were joking around, and of course you did forget that it was on Mac, and
I forgot because it's like on Mac. Linux. It's just like you don't buy a Mac for gaming, you know. So I don't even think of those as gaming devices. It's like you buy a Mac if you're into that ecosystem, and you know, you can game on it, stuff like that.
Oh, Vinicus. He says you weren't joking, Jez. You made a mistake, and that was it. No, I know Jez pretty well. He was joking. I could hear it in his voice when he was saying it. Jez, tell the people, were you being 100% serious, or were you joking around because you knew it would kind of get under my skin?
I was being facetious, but I genuinely did forget that it was on Mac and Linux in the moment.
I mean, so did I. I mean, I forget a lot of things. I forgot Steam was on Mac and Linux.
Yeah.
It's easy
to forget because it's just not synonymous with those platforms. I remember seeing like a really old Mac demo where they were demonstrating a new Mac graphics chip, and they were saying, look, Diablo 3 at 30 frames per second on the new Mac. And I was just like, really? And this was like, you know, it's just the whole idea of gaming on Mac just cracks me up. But everyone forgets about Linux.
Yeah, what do you think's a bigger possibility? Sony going to Epic Games, dropping their exclusives, or them creating their own launcher on PC if they really wanted to put their games on PC? What if you're Sony, like, and just for the sake of the argument, like I said it before, I think it's a one-time thing. I think the Quantic Dream games are just a bone thrown to developer. I don't think Sony games are coming to the PC. So this is more of a devil's advocate thing. But let's just say they are. So let's say Sony is thinking of putting their games on PC. Would it be better for them to partner with Epic? Or do you think they would build their own launcher on PC and just release their games there?
I mean, if there's free cash to be made with Epic, I mean, why not? You know, depends how much money they're offering. If the costs of Epic floating the bill for storage and distribution of cloud and maintaining a platform and updates and all that sort of stuff, you know, let Epic pay for that, you know. And competition's a good thing, especially in the PC ecosystem, which has been dominated by Steam for so long, for so long. And yeah, it's annoying having multiple launchers on your computer, but who cares at the end of the day? To be honest, the truth is, I don't think this is indicative of any big partnership between
Sony.
Neither
did I, and that's exactly what I just said.
This is all hypothetical.
Right. Ravenflow says, if you knew Sony, this wouldn't be a question. I did say I was playing devil's advocate here, right? I did say I didn't believe it. Some people just kind of, I don't know, they listen to it and they're like, oh my God, Rand. It's like, did you hear what I said right before I posed the question? A devil's advocate. I know they're not going to do it. It was just an interesting talking point, and me and Jez both don't believe it. Anyways, moving on. Cuphead on Switch, Jez. Thoughts on that? What do you think?
Well, we talked about it before, right?
Indeed. We talked about this on the podcast a couple weeks. Not really a surprise.
We also talked about Ori possibly coming to Switch 2, which hasn't happened yet, but I think it's gonna happen.
Which eventually. Ori? Because I think it's the first one. I don't think it's the second one. Although yeah, I guess it's gonna be both.
Definitive Edition, and then Ori 2 later on, maybe.
Yes, I fully expect Ori 1 to be on the Switch. It's a perfect game for the Switch.
Yeah, for sure. I think. Well, it's interesting, right? Because Microsoft previously in their GDC panel description, it said we're announcing an SDK for Android, iOS, and Switch, and now we reported it and everyone reported it. And then Microsoft deleted the description from their GDC panel website. And then they went back and said that, oh, actually it's Android. The SDK is for Android and iOS. And we have no plans for a Nintendo Switch SDK at this time, but we're exploring it starting with Cuphead. So it feels like maybe the announcement was premature and the work to get a full-blown third-party SDK for Xbox Live games on Nintendo Switch is still ongoing, or maybe Nintendo aren't happy to just go heads first into that yet. But I think it's still an interesting, cool thing, you know. I mean, getting Xbox Live achievements for playing games on Switch sounds cool to me. But at the same time, it's like, do I want to double dip and stuff like that? The real benefits are like the crossplay stuff, right? Like Minecraft crossplay on between Switch and PC and Xbox and phones. That's great. And if we can get that for Cuphead, which I believe doesn't have online co-op right now, right? It's just local co-op.
Just local, right?
Yeah. So like they did say that one day Cuphead will have online co-op. I believe they said that. So it would be cool to one day be able to play between Switch and Xbox and PC using that SDK. And I suppose that's part of what Microsoft's exploring here, because there are obvious benefits there to everyone involved. You know, bigger pool of gamers to play with, less barriers to entry, and then more people playing your game creates this halo effect where more people end up buying your game and stuff like that. And obviously games that have multiplayer, they market themselves because you get your friends to play them, stuff like that, blah, 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 blah. So I suppose it's going to be an interesting experiment, but I think the GDC comments were misleading into thinking it was going to be some grand partnership, because that's the way it read to me. you know. But I guess, like,
well, yeah. So I think Nintendo is going to be very careful about what games they pick. I don't know if they want full blown Xbox Live on the Switch where like anybody can use it, but I do think they would they will cherry pick certain games and that they approve that could essentially have Xbox Live. Does that make more sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, they need games for the Switch, right? And having a game like Cuphead and Ori, they're no brainers.
This is where me and you disagree, because you talked about it earlier before the show, and you said Switch games sell because there ain't any games on Switch, and I say I think that's crazy because tons of games come out on Switch every week. There's plenty of competition on the Switch. It's, you know, like, I would not be surprised.
No. What I was talking about was there's no AAA competition. There's no Destiny soaking up everyone's time.
Okay, yeah,
there's
fair enough.
Call of Duty forcing people to not buy anything. There's like a lot of smaller games, which makes it a more vibrant ecosystem than like console platforms where you stick to one game for a long time. I think there's less competition for time on Switch compared to console. And that's why some of the indie games sell better, because there's no big service games on the Switch yet, except for like a few, like Warframe and stuff like that. That's the point I was making.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The Switch doesn't have a ton of AAA third-party games because it's not powerful to have it. But I mean, the games they do have, they sell incredibly well. Like Cuphead sold, what, 3 million copies so far across like PC and Xbox? I would not be surprised in a month after it comes out for Switch if the Switch version is the highest selling out of the two, out of Xbox and PC.
Yeah, for sure. But like, if you look at the Switch top 10 store, Final Fantasy IX is one of the top selling games on there right now.
Well, it should be. Final Fantasy IX is amazing.
Yeah, but that came out like 50,000 years ago.
Indeed. You mean you're still talking about the Pokemons and World of Warcraft? How long ago did World of Warcraft come out?
Yeah, but like, I'm weird. Do you think Final Fantasy IX would beat Call of Duty on console or on Switch if it was there?
If Call of Duty came out on Switch, I'm not really sure that's a game.
See,
people are
taking me out of context now. Super Smash Bros. Sold 10 mil because Switch has no games. That's what we're doing now. That's not what I said, man. I was talking about the third-party indie games that are selling really well on Switch and aren't selling so well on Steam, for example, is because Steam's crammed full of things that are sucking away people's time, whereas Switch isn't. That's all I said. Everyone's just taking me out of context now.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, PUBG is the, you know, Sea of Thieves is the PUBG of 2018.
Yeah.
Which, Sea of Thieves, Jazz, fishing.
Yes. So Sea of Thieves is now PUBG of 2019 with fishing.
So are you going to get back in Sea of Thieves for fishing?
Yes, I am, Rand.
I don't believe you. I don't hear any excitement in your voice for the fishing that Joe Neat has added to the game after you begging him for it. I don't hear the announcement, the excitement coming from you right now. I'm sorry. I think it's just fake.
That's because I'm triggered by chat right now. But the Sea of Thieves fishing stuff, like, it's awesome because it looks like it's not just some dumb system that people have just slapped in there. It looks like pretty involved, right? It looks kind of like Far Cry's fishing system where you have to lead the fish around and stuff like that. What did you think of it? Because they're also announcing single player quests and stuff like that and a story mode, which is one of your criticisms.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I have my doubts about an actual true story mode. You know, Sea of Thieves looks great on my TV, but I don't know. I just kind of get bored playing it. But I did see that. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Fishing, unbelievable that they're finally adding that to Sea of Thieves. And Zed says, I guess this might be your new intro. This is Jez, the man taken out of context. There you go. You're always taken out of context.
Yeah, this is a problem with doing a live unscripted podcast.
It definitely
if
is.
If you misspeak a word or make a joke that doesn't sound jokey enough, people can like extract, cherry pick the clip and then turn it into a big Twitter drama.
And then make podcasts about it. Yeah.
Yeah, make podcasts about it.
Yes, they sure as hell did. But the other big kind of news this week out of GDC was Epic Games throwing money around like candy, still going after Steam's throat, getting all these games, hoarding them, and making PC gamers cry. Like, and basically say, I got nothing against PC gamers. I understand the ones who love Steam and their frustrations about having games that they thought were coming to Steam getting pulled and not come, because if it was Xbox, I'd be pissed too. Like if Control was available for pre-order and then they're like, oh, by the way, and I pre-ordered it and they're like, that's only on PlayStation, I'd be like, whoa, man, that's kind of screwed up, you know? So I'm kind of looking at this whole PC thing and I'm just kind of like, wow, the console war has literally come to PC. And
yeah,
it has. There is a company now that is using their money, that their billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars they made from Fortnite. And what they're doing is they're trying to make a Steam competitor. And instead of doing it with their own games or doing it the right way, they're attacking it with, you know, more favorable deals for publishers with the 88-12 split. And they're just straight up giving it's mostly publishers, right? Because one of the big games that got brought over was The Outer Worlds, a game that people were like, I can't wait to play this. It's Fallout from the makers of Fallout, but not Bethesda. Oh my God, save us. Save us, Outer Worlds. And then you go to their Reddit today, their subreddit, you see everything with the announcement, and they have turned on Obsidian like that. Like that. And
I'm gonna go look at the subreddit now you've said that, because I love Reddit drama so much.
The worst thing about it is Obsidian had nothing to do about it. Supposedly they only found out about it a day before it actually happened.
Oh,
that
my
this
God.
Was an this was a decision by the publisher, Take Two. You know, same thing with Metro Exodus. It was a decision by the publisher. But like, I don't think gamers really care about that or want to find out the information. So they just be like, well, screw it. I'll wait until it comes to Steam. And hey, that's your idea as a consumer. If you can wait, go right ahead, you know? But my God, to see Epic just swing the money around like with barrels full, I thought I'd never see this happen in the PC space. Yeah. And I thought
can
we
can
were
can you see this? I'm screen sharing right now.
I mean, yeah, I see it.
The sellout. You see this this meme, the sellout mm-hmm. world.
Oh yeah, I see it. Yeah.
It's pretty mean, right?
Yeah. So
there's loads of it. Like people, if we just have a quick look at the subreddit here, people, promotion of piracy will lead to a ban. I understand that many of you are upset about the recent news, but promoting or even saying you got a pirate game is a violation and will result in a ban. I want to support this game, but I don't want to support the Epic Store. From a console gamer's perspective, this is the fastest 180 I've ever seen a community take.
I'm telling
you,
man.
And then there's just memes and memes and memes. Everyone disliked that. Minus 500 karma. Lily hates you. Veronica hates you. Blah, blah, blah. Fallout memes and stuff like that. This is a community on fire right now.
It is. It is. And it was a game people were like, oh my God, it's what we wanted. It's anti-Fallout by the Fallout people. Shout out to the Ravenflow for the super chat. He says 330 people in here and only 80 likes. Please hit that like button. Yes. Please hit the like button if you're enjoying the podcast. We greatly would appreciate that. And
thanks, Ryan.
I thought I'd never one would see it come to the PC, and it's not just Outer Worlds. It's Control, Remedy's next game or newest game that's launching August 27th. That is now coming to Epic.
Do you know what the worst one is?
Which one?
It's a game called Phoenix Point, right?
Oh so yeah, that was crowdfunded, right?
Yeah, exactly. So Phoenix Point was crowdfunded on Fig promised to come to good old games and Steam, and they crowdfunded it on that basis of it coming to Steam, and now it's not coming. Now it's not coming to Steam after people after they took people's money. So like people are trying to get refunds and stuff for the crowdfunding and all that sort of stuff, and it sucks because like Phoenix Point is it looks really awesome. It's like from the original developers of XCOM, and you know, I like those sort of strategy games. But you know, it's funny though, Rand, because Epic Games at GDC, they were keen to say that Metro Exodus sold 250% more copies.
2.5.
Oh, sorry, did I get
it was
that
like
wrong?
2.5. It's like 2.5 times more.
2.5 times more copies than Metro Last Light did on Steam.
If you launch line it, even though like I think the Redux version came out a year later, they really didn't give good stats on that, right? But yeah, supposedly Metro did well. And honestly, I think like the casual Steam user doesn't really care. They'll be like, all right, I'll just get up. To a lot of people, I think they just view the Epic Store as just another launcher and it's not a big deal. And I think most games that go there will probably do okay. You know, I'm sure like the super hardcore Steam PC guys will, you know, stay firm and not go, but I can't imagine like that entire community is just like, we're not going, you know, because they also mentioned Ubisoft renewed their deal. You're going to have more Ubisoft games only on the Epic Store as well as some of their back catalog. So Division 2 must have sold pretty well for on Epic's game store for Ubisoft to want to, you know, continue their arrangement, right?
Yeah.
But this is just so weird to me to see the console war come to PC. I thought we were almost done with this type of stuff. It really seemed like game development had gotten to the point where it was so expensive that you didn't really see third-party exclusives anymore on Xbox and PlayStation. And the only ones you really did see might be smaller indies because they're a small team. Might be, say, like the Japanese developers putting stuff on PlayStation or Switch and not on Xbox because, well, quite frankly, Japanese games don't sell on Xbox, so it's more of a business decision. But for the most part, they have the same games because game development is expensive and they want to sell to as many people as possible. And then suddenly, Epic comes in on the PC side. They're throwing money around like crazy trying to get devs to come over there. And now you have Google entering the market. And I can see them throwing tons of money around, and the only way to get really traction on their service is to buy exclusives too while they're waiting for their own first party. So I could see like next year, Google having like, you know, just as an example, what if Splinter Cell? We joke about this, but what if Ubisoft's like, you know what? The next Splinter Cell is exclusive to Google Stadia.
And then you start having
that battle again.
We are laughing at Rand's misfortune. That'd be really funny. Sorry.
I mean, I'm just saying it's something that could possibly play on Stadia if it was exclusive. Because like I said, I have a PlayStation for the exclusives and I think the Sony exclusives are great. I have a Switch for the exclusives that I am interested in, which is quite frankly not a lot.
Pokemon.
I play everything on Xbox because that is my preferred platform. And the same would happen with Stadia. It would be a cheaper purchase for sure, because all I would have to buy is that disgusting ass controller. But if they had Splinter Cell, yeah, I would have to.
Well, actually, Rand, apparently you can play Google Stadia with a Xbox adaptive controller, and you can plug an Xbox controller into the Xbox adaptive controller.
So maybe
you could get around it like that.
But I did see an interview that if you wanted to use it through, what's the thing you plug into the TV? Is it a Chromecast?
Yes.
That if you were going to use it through a Chromecast, that you'd have to use the Google controller.
Ah, okay.
So yeah, but I mean that exclusives, they matter. You know, they sell consoles.
People in chat are saying you can use any controller with Stadia.
Yes. Okay. So on PC and some other places you can. They did announce that all USB controllers will work and mouse and keyboard, but I did read an interview with Phil Harrison that said if you're using Chromecast, you can't use an Xbox controller. You have to use the Stadia controller. So yeah. Maybe you can use a third-party USB one, but either way, you know, you won't be able to use the Xbox controller, which is the one that I want to use. But no, I would get it if they had exclusives worthwhile for playing. I mean, that's why I have a PlayStation and Switch, for games that I can't play on my Xbox. And if there was something I really wanted to play on the PC, like really had to play, I have the PC ready right here. So I think exclusives matter.
Of course they matter.
Of course they matter. There's this kind of talk that they don't matter. I mean, Microsoft doubled down on getting all these studios to create exclusive content for the Xbox platform. They realize content is king. Sony knows content is king. Google is building their own. They all know exclusives matter. You know, some go about a little bit differently than others. Microsoft is putting some of their games here and there, putting Halo on Steam and all that different stuff, but they all matter at the end game. And I mean, don't even get me started on the whole exclusives are anti-consumer thing. I don't know if we talked about that the other day. Did we talk about that?
I don't know. I don't think so.
You think exclusives? Do you think the fact that God of War is only on PlayStation, do you think that's anti-consumer?
Hell no, because it wouldn't exist if they weren't sort of getting something out of it.
Right. I mean, like the idea, like I should be able to walk into Burger King and order a Big Mac. I see people make this argument all the time, and I'm just like, no.
I mean, the whole point of exclusives is that they've invested the money into God of War because it's exclusive. If it was going to be on everything, they wouldn't need to invest so much. I don't know.
I mean, I guess it may be if you're going by the strictest, loosest definition of anti-consumer, where anything that favors a business over the consumer is anti-consumer, then I guess like the idea of God of War only being on PlayStation only really benefits Sony, not the consumer. So if you're going for that loose definition, then yeah, it would be. But like, the true definition of like anti-consumer has to deal with like improperly favoring businesses over consumers. And God of War being on PlayStation isn't improper. KFC selling KFC chickens and not Browns and vice versa isn't improper. That's just, you know, like, so it's like, well, it's not, you know what I mean? So I don't know. People have asked me to make a video about it, and maybe I will. I don't even know like where I'd approach it from.
I wrote an article today about the whole Epic Games thing, because like, you know, as we saw from browsing the Outer Worlds subreddit, there is like a core of people who are, you know, really angry about this. But as we see from Metro Exodus's sales, there's also a wide middle of people who just don't care. And it's not like the console war, where if I want that Destiny DLC, you know, I have to buy a PlayStation to get it, which costs like $400 or however much it is in America. And whereas on PC, all you have to do is install a free launcher and then double click it, which it's hard to get too sympathetic towards people who are, you know, don't want to install the Epic Games launcher. I mean, it's not that much of a big deal, you know, and people could say things like, oh, but what about my data? Epic Games going to save my data? What about the privacy and stuff? These people probably have Facebook. They probably have Android phones. You know, it's just like a fake argument for a lot of people, I think, you know. And at the end of the day, no online platform is going to be completely privacy perfect anyway. So, you know, unless you're living in a shack in the woods, you ain't private, you know. And these are legitimate concerns to have about the Epic Games Store. They are legitimate concerns to have. I'm not saying they're not. But at the same time, who cares? It's free to download the Epic Game Launcher. You sign up, it takes 30 seconds. You know, I've got Steam, I've got Battle.net installed on my computer right now for World of Warcraft and StarCraft and stuff, you know. And I've got good old games for the few games that I've got installed on there, like the original Fallout games and stuff like that. I don't care, man. These are more programs.
Me and you, like, would look at it like that. But I'm not a PC gamer. Right. I'm not one into that ecosystem. So to me, it's like, yeah, Steam and Epic Games are just a launcher to me, because I don't really know much about it, to be quite frank.
Yeah, I don't have any friends on Steam, like, because I use Discord for my gamer, you know, stuff on PC. you know, I don't care about Steam's social platform. I don't care about Steam's modding tools and stuff like that. And the features that Epic Games doesn't have that people are criticizing them for, like Steam didn't have those either when it first came out. It matured over time. If all I want to do is launch and play a game, I'll do it through the Microsoft Store. I'll do it through Steam. I'll do it through Battle.net. I'll do it for Epic Games. I don't care, man.
You know, it was funny, though, that the Outer Worlds, though, is still releasing on Windows Store.
Of course it is. Because
Epic doesn't care about the Windows Store. They don't know nobody uses it. And I'm sure, you know, since Microsoft owns Obsidian now, maybe they work something out, or maybe that's just the ultimate, like, you know, troll moment. Like, yeah, we're taking it off Steam, but you can still put it on Windows Store. We don't care because we know nobody's buying it there.
Hey, I'll buy it on the Windows Store. How about that? I'll be the only person who does.
But. I just kind of feel bad for Obsidian. I feel bad for 4A. They make these games. Well,
that was like literally in my article. That's what I was saying is like, because when Coffee Stain announced Satisfactory as an Epic Games exclusive, I felt bad for them because they're like small indie company and they're getting all this hate now. But like, that was when they announced it. If you go up to Satisfactory's YouTube channel now, most people have gotten over it. And the Satisfactory came out this week. And like, when in the announcement trailer on YouTube, they had like 4,000 dislikes and like 100 likes. But now, if you look at the Satisfactory launch trailer, it's just likes, because the people who hated this whole Epic Games thing, they've either gotten over it or they've moved on, you know. And Satisfactory looks like a really great game, to be fair.
Yeah.
So
I just
it sounds like the PR flack is probably worth it.
Well, I get why indie developers would do this. I totally understand. You get the 88-12 split. You have Epic dumping money in your lap because indie games need all the help they can get to market it and stand out. Your game could fail, right? So like any help that Epic could give, I don't blame any like small developers for taking that deal and going with Epic. But then you look like with like Obsidian and Outer Worlds, that game's published by 2K, Private Division. They're a big publisher, although I guess you could say it's a smaller arm of it. But and even Ubisoft, it's like they're a huge publisher too. It's like they're not really hurting for money. And the only ones that really hurts are the developers, because now you have a community that's enraged. And they're breathing down Obsidian developers' necks, and they had nothing to do with this deal. It was all 2K, and the money's going to go right to 2K. It doesn't even go to Obsidian. It just goes right to the publisher because they're publishing it. Yeah. I really do feel bad for them.
I feel bad for them too. It sucks. And you remember when Metro Exodus was announced and one of the 4A Games developers got really upset about it and they said something like, well, if everyone boycotts Metro Exodus, we won't be able to make any more of them or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when they said that. But hey, your leak from the day, the Xbox Sad Edition. tell us all about it.
Oh, the Xbox Sad Edition. It's so funny that's what it's being called now. Like, you got the X-Bone, and now you've got the X-Bone Sad. It cracks me up. But, yeah, so today we leaked the box art for the Xbox, all-digital console. And it doesn't say all-digital edition on the box. It just says all-digital. Like, we saw some package shots of the box, and then we recreated them in Photoshop to protect the photograph's origins, because it's probably obvious where that came from if someone might recognize it. I don't know. But in any case, it looks like it's bundled with Sea of Thieves, Forza Horizon 3, and Minecraft. It doesn't look like it's bundled with Game Pass, which is what we were expecting it to be. And also, the design is exactly the same as the Xbox One S. So it's not going to be a slim Xbox or anything like that.
Well, I didn't expect it. They're not going to change the manufacturing lines for
Yes. And but a lot of people were expecting it to be slimmer because, you know, as we discussed on one podcast, like, do you remember how small the PS2 got over time?
Yep.
But anyway, and also we announced the launch date, which is going to be May 7th, global launch, apparently, for all current Xbox markets, but apparently Brad Sam's already wrote about that in his previous article. I didn't know.
Now, here's my question Forza Horizon 3. Why? Why put Forza Horizon 3 in there? That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know.
Why not put 4 in there?
I don't know.
I understand Minecraft and Sea of Thieves. Well, for an old digital box, why not include 3 months of Game Pass? That'd be perfect. I don't know.
Apparently, it comes with a year of Xbox Live, month of Xbox Live. Sorry.
I mean, don't they all come with some form of Xbox Live?
Oh yeah, I think they do.
You know, for something that Fax Machine says Horizon 4 is on Game Pass. I mean, well, so Sea of Thieves and Minecraft. Minecraft is going to be on Game Pass next month, and Sea of Thieves has been there since launch. So I don't really think that's the issue. It's just Horizon 3 is a weird game. It's hopefully when the pricing comes out, it's cheaper than the box or cheaper than what it currently is. I'm not really sure how this test is going to go over, Jez. You know,
I think like I do wonder if this is basically them getting rid of excess stock as they're transitioning to next gen, rather than just leave piles of keys for Forza Horizon 3 lying around. Maybe they're just offloading it into this bundle.
They just took the excess stock and used it as server blades for xCloud.
Well, there's that too. I mean, we don't know how much excess stock they've got, but you have to imagine that it's probably quite a bit, right?
Yeah. Probably quite a bit. Well, Jez wanted a shorter show today because he didn't sleep very well last night. So we're going to start taking questions now. So get us a couple questions, and then we will get out of here. But I wanted to thank everybody for dropping in live or listening to this later. I really appreciate all the comments and chat and the conversation that was going on, all the support through the Super Chat. It means a lot to us here. And if you enjoyed the show, make sure you hit that like button and sub to the channel and follow Jez on Twitter. So Face, he wants to know, Jez, has your mind changed about Days Gone after more previews were shown? And what's your prediction for Days Gone? I did see that you pre-ordered the game.
I did, yeah. I don't get why Days Gone is getting so much hate. Like everyone, when I tweeted that it's pre-ordered, people were like, oh my god, why are you pre-ordering that and stuff like that? And it's like, what? It looks awesome. It looks like a AAA State of Decay to me right now. Like the zombie swarms and like the awesome graphics and the apparently really long campaign and stuff like that. It sounds awesome. I don't get the hate. Can you explain to me the hate?
I thought it looked quite generic, especially compared to their other exclusives. I'm still going to play it day one. Everything I've seen from the game just doesn't really excite me. But that's me. It's 2019. I've had enough of zombies. I don't care.
I don't care, man. Every game should have zombies.
You ever see that Angry Joe skit where he like, I think he's reviewing, I forget what game, and other Joe comes in and he's like, hey, Joe, you want to play a zombie game? And like at first, like Joe's like, yeah. Hey, Joe, you want to play a zombie game? Hey, Joe, you want to play a zombie game? Hey, Joe, you want to play a zombie game? And by the end, he's just like, stop it. I don't want to play more zombie games. You know? So
I don't care, man. I'll play every single zombie game that comes out. I love zombie games.
Yeah.
Dying Light 2, like Steve Keller just said in chat, Dying Light. And then we got Dying Light 2 coming out at some point, probably next year, I'd imagine at this point. But I'm super hyped for that as well. I love zombie games, man. I don't know if it's... I don't know. I'm a bit strange, maybe.
So Saltiest Gaming wants to know. Now, this is an interesting question, and I'm going to think hard about it. Favorite ice cream flavor?
Oh, my God.
I know, right? You weren't expecting that.
I weren't expecting that, actually. But in where I live in Germany, we've got an amazing ice cream like restaurant just for ice cream. And they do like an amazing banana split. So I'm going to say banana split. It's not really a flavor, but it's an ice cream dish, but I'm going to say that anyway.
My favorite, the one that I've always gotten, I go into like a Baskin Robbins and you look at all the flavors and everything looks good, but then you know deep down what you want. And that's mint chocolate chip.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Green chocolate. Oh my God. It's good, my good absolute choice. Favorite. Good mint choice, chocolate yeah. chip is my favorite ice cream. Making me want ice cream right now, Salty.
Same.
Fax Machine wants to know, how long do you think Game Pass will be supported on the Xbox One after the next-gen Xbox is out? I think the whole point of it was for next generation, and they had it out now to get people used to the idea. Like, I think Game Pass is designed to make money years from now when the subscription's huge and there's a lot of people in and subscribing to it, which takes years. So they had to start it now, and the whole point is to have it up and running and provable to devs that it works, so next gen they can get more games and have more people subscribe. So I think it'll be supported for years and years and years to come.
Yes,
definitely. I think that's the whole point. Let's see. Mars Bars wants to know, do you think Infinite has the potential to be game of the year? I'm assuming you mean Halo Infinite when that comes out in 2020. Potential, sure. Well, based on 343's previous history, I guess I would say no. I guess I'll also say what is also coming out in 2020. If Last of Us Part 2 is 2020, then that's a shoe-in to win. But I think if they can nail the multiplayer and they can provide a great Master Chief-focused, orientated story that's like a spiritual successor, I think, sure, why not? I mean, there's six candidates for Game of the Year. Sure, Halo Infinite could be a Game of the Year contender. I don't see why not. So Shady wants to know, doesn't the idea of 1,000-person BR matches on Stadia get your blood pumping? You're a BR crackhead after all. It depends who's it made by, you know?
It's like, I just crack up at the idea of it being fast enough without input lag to support that.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because people were like, oh my God, like they went up on stage, and I thought this was disingenuous as hell, but they went up on stage and was like, oh, Stadia is 10 teraflops, so much more powerful than the PS4 Pro and Xbox One X. And it's like, yeah, but I ain't going to have that hardware attached to my TV, am I, Phil Harrison? It's going to be bottlenecked by my internet connection, an artifact, an input lag. So it's not really providing me a 10 teraflop experience, is it?
Ooh, that 10.7 teraflops of raw power.
Bottlenecked by my crappy Victorian England copper wire broadband.
I love that part when they went in the that announcement where they're like, 10.7 teraflops of power, more than the combined power of Xbox One X and PS4 Pro. Even though the other two are hardware your own, and that GPU is in a server rack somewhere that you'll never be able to access. You know? Like, come on. The Ravenflow, shout out to you for the super chat, brother. He says, will you try Cuphead on the Switch, Rand? Interesting question. I own Cuphead on the Xbox One. I've beaten it. I don't have all the achievements. I think I'm missing like two. Would I play it again on the Switch?
I will.
I don't see why. Look, I think I've mentioned this before. My Switch is docked at all times. I know someone like Salty would probably disagree with me. He probably keeps his mobile. But since I keep mine docked, I don't see why. The Xbox controller is better than the Pro controller. I mean, I might as well just play it again on the Xbox if I wanted to play it again. So I would say probably not.
I think I am going to double dip on it, actually. Because, like, there's a lot of times when, like I mentioned before, where I am traveling, and that's what I love about the Switch, you know. So I think I'm going to double dip on Cuphead.
Fair enough. And I know a lot of people will. I mean, a lot of people are definitely going to buy Switch. It's the perfect game for the system.
Yeah.
Snatcher Hunter wants to know, Rand, how will streaming take over physical games in the USA when most cities are hindered by data caps and net neutrality is out of the window? Those are questions that have yet to be answered. I mean, digital hasn't taken over physical yet, and this whole gen has been nothing but digital. I mean, it's made strides. It might be right around 50%, but it hasn't overtaken it yet. And that's why I think most of next generation is going to get people comfortable with the idea of streaming games, which is why I said it's going to be two gens before hardware even goes away. next gen to get people comfortable with the idea, like digital was this gen. And then the gen after that, even though it might be commonplace, they're still going to have consoles. So you have to worry about three generations from now. But yeah, data caps, net neutrality, all that stuff are going to be a major factor, don't you think, Jez?
I do, but I'll say this, Rand. I've heard Microsoft has accounted for this. And one of the cool things that Microsoft has, which some of the other companies don't have, is corporate leverage. So, like, they can be like, you know, Comcast cuts a deal on this, you know, on streaming, and we'll give you a really great deal on Office 365 subscriptions and stuff like that, you know. So, like, when it comes to Microsoft cutting deals for xCloud, because, like, Netflix pays Comcast for access, for high-speed access, right, or something like that, mm-hmm. since America hates net neutrality for some reason. So I've heard that Microsoft's exploring that avenue of everything. Like, they're not being complacent with how this stuff's going to pan out.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see who makes the mistakes and who doesn't when it comes to it.
So DJ wants to know, when will Jez and Rand start getting E3 rumors?
When will we, Rand?
I don't know. I usually start hearing stuff about the month before.
I've got a personal policy of not leaking anything E3 related, so you won't be getting anything from me.
I don't leak anything E3 related. I will say, though,
sometimes
I'll throw a prediction out there that I know is true, but I don't kind of do that. So, I mean, I usually start hearing stuff a month before, so got a couple months. Jez might know their whole E3 plan right now. You never know. He may just not tell. Between Jez and Cloberl and Brad Sams, we're going to know probably know everything. I mean, Brad Sams is literally leaking emails from Phil Spencer to Team Xbox.
I reckon Brad probably knows. I honestly don't know a damn thing about E3. That's the truth be told.
Yeah. Vinicus wants to know, how do you think Microsoft will handle physical media next gen that only Anaconda will have? Wait. How will they name the platform on the media box? So how do you think Microsoft will handle the physical media next gen that only Xbox Anaconda will have? So what do we think the name's going to be? What do you think the name's going to be, and how will they handle physical media? I still think it'll just be like a box that it's same as this gen. It'll be a disc that you buy from Amazon or whatever, and you have digital and streaming. I don't think that will change. Mm. What do you think they'll name the platform, I guess, or the system?
I have no idea.
Do you think they keep the Xbox One branding?
No, I think they'll ditch the One branding. I think they'll go for a fresh start and stuff like that. Turn a corner. I mean, I could be wrong on that, you know. I mean, they could stick with it, but I don't think so. I think they'll ditch it. Physical media, I don't think... I mean, is that question basically, are they going to try and do what they did in 2013 by having a dual licensing model where the disc is a license rather than an actual disc? Or will they keep things the way they are now? I personally think they'll keep things the way they are now. But I don't think they'll make that mistake again. I think, like, if they want to lock people into digital, they'll do it with Game Pass and they'll do it with xCloud. But I think they'll keep the disc model the way it is now, personally. What do you think?
I think they'll keep it the same that it's modeled at right now. Sam Tolbert, so this will be the last question, and then we'll get out of here. What are your current expectations for Game of the Year? Say five candidates. So I'm not sure if you mean like five games that I played right now that would be Game of the Year. I really haven't. So like my top five, let's just say, looks like Resident Evil 2 Remake, Apex Legends, The Division 2. Because I haven't played Metro yet, and I haven't played Devil May Cry 5 yet, and I haven't played Sekiro. So those are the games, and definitely not Crackdown, and definitely not Far Cry. Like, I would not, but I'm assuming you mean, like, by the end of the year? See, this year's going to be tough to call. And here's the phone ringing again. So, Jez, why don't you give your top five and I'll answer.
Okay, well, I think Ori 2 has a chance. And I also think Gears 5 has a chance if it definitely comes out this year, which it almost certainly will. I've got like really high hopes for what they're doing with Gears 5. I think they've probably looked at what they did with Gears 4 and they're going to, you know, up the ante, new features, more ambitious storytelling and that sort of thing. I can see that being a pretty good one. And then you've got like, you've got Resident Evil 2, which is incredible. I don't know if that'll be Game of the Year material, especially since it came out at the start of the year. I always find like games that come out at the start of the year tend to be forgotten in the award when it comes to awards and stuff. So that could be the case, I guess, for Resident Evil. But I don't know. For me personally, probably Pokemon.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what launches. I mean, Ori 2 is going to be in there for my personal favorite. I think it'll actually make Game of the Year at the Game Awards, but it depends on what launches. Cyberpunk comes out this year, it'll be there.
I don't think Cyberpunk launches this year.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, we don't know what's coming out at the end of the year. Like, we only know what's coming out up until April. So it's hard to really say. I mean, If Last of Us Part 2 comes out this year, that's a shoo-in. If Death Stranding comes out this year, that's another possible shoo-in with, you know, how much the gaming media loves Kojima. You look at Sekiro and the reviews it's getting, they love those type of games. I could easily see Sekiro being up there. What does Nintendo have for the year? Nintendo always, is the Pokemon game going to be?
Pokemon, Fire Emblem.
Maybe the Star Wars game. I could easily see Apex Legends being like, there's so many possibilities and we just don't know
what
games are, or, you know, coming out this year at the end of the year.
If Apex Legends keeps up with momentum, I can see reviewers jump into hand that rewards.
I mean, they gave PUBG Game of the Year, where it was nominated for Game of the Year in 2017, right? 2017. Yeah. So it's not outside the realm of possibility. It's just, I mean, you could, if everything launches this year, you're going to have Cyberpunk, Last of Us, Death Stranding. I don't even know what else.
Rage 2.
Nah, Rage 2 is not going to. No.
Amazing.
And anyways, that's the show, guys. We really appreciate everyone being here. What do you got going on for the rest of the week, Jez?
Rest of the week, I'm going drinking tomorrow, so you won't see much of me tomorrow. Well, you might see some drunk tweets or something.
Ooh, drunk tweets from Jez. Those are always the best. And as for me, I don't know. I'll probably be dropping more videos. I got some ideas in my head that I want to do. So look out for those. So sub to the channel. If you're new, hit that bell icon. It'll notify you every time we do the podcast or I upload a video. Make sure on your way out, you hit the like button. And we will see you next week for a new show. Later, guys.
Take care, everyone.